Hey, my name is Molly Jensen, and I'm the CEO of Afropods, and my Black is transnational.
You are listening to Season 5 of My Dad's Podcast, My Black is Transnational, a podcast about Blackness and reconnecting back to our native homelands. Find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Check us out on YouTube. You can follow us on Instagram or blacktransnational.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to another episode of My Black is Transnational. My name is Dr. Kalechi Bay Lamberts. And on this episode, I get to talk to somebody very important. I get to talk with Molly Jensen, all the way from Kenya, Nairobi, Kenya, the CEO of Afropods, which is one of the largest podcast streaming platforms for content creators like myself and all across the continent of Africa. I get to talk with Molly about her experience, her transnational background, her upbringing, living in New York and deciding to move to Nairobi, Kenya, and what that looks like. And what that looks like in terms of, we talk about a little bit about work culture. We talk about her goals and aspirations. We talk about living in Africa and the kind of breaking the stigma that is tied into it. But before we get into that, let's get into our formalities. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, you can find this podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. You can follow us on social media. We are on Instagram at Black Transnational Podcast. We're also on Facebook at Black Transnational Podcast. You can follow me, the host, at Black Transnational _. And we're also on Twitter at MB Transnational. And finally, we're on YouTube at Black Transnational Podcast. You can just find us there. You can check out our website at www.blacktransnational.com. It's a one-stop shop. Get all the information that you need about this podcast. So, you know, this episode was very fun. Again, I really appreciate Ms. Jensen for taking the time to all the way in Kenya. We were like, you know, I think like 8 hours ahead or something like that. It was like 9 o'clock where I was at, and it was like 5 p.m. where she was at. And so for taking the time after a full day to talk with me about her experiences, her passion for supporting content creators all across the continent, and the work that she's doing to make Afropods what it is and what it's going to be. And just being a Black woman CEO, transnational Black woman CEO, doing things, staying connected to her family in New York, and still maintaining and creating a new life for herself in Nairobi, Kenya. And so that was very interesting. And I think you really enjoy how she communicates and how passionate she is about what she does and serving others. And, you know, just her describing living in Africa and us kind of breaking, defeating or overcoming, demystifying is probably the better word, the stigma of what it is to move back to Africa and live there. And so it was a pleasure being able to talk with her. And I hope you all find this just as enjoyable as I did, because it was fun. And one day I hope to have her on again, and we could talk a little bit more about just what Afropods is as we continue, as it continues to grow. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Molly Jensen, CEO of Afropods. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of My Black is Transnational. And I have on here today a special guest joining us all the way from Nairobi, Kenya. I have the pleasure of being able to talk with Ms. Molly Jensen, who is the CEO of Afropods, which we're going to learn a lot about, the number one podcast platform for Africa and Africa's content creators, which I'm hoping that we can be able to jump on ourselves. So looking forward to learning a little bit more about Molly and just the transnational experience that you have to share with us, along with just being a boss and being the CEO of one of the upcoming platforms for us, by us. And so thank you for joining the show, Molly. Welcome.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And hi, everyone who's listening at home or in your car.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So before we get into it, usually I give this long-winded intro, but because of the sake of time and just giving you the opportunity to talk a little bit more, if you want to just tell your listeners, tell everybody just who you are, where you're rep, anything interesting about yourself before we get into our conversation.
Hey everyone. So my name is Molly. I am raised in New York. I grew up there. I went to school in DC, and I've lived in Kenya for the last 4 years. My mother was born and raised in Ghana. My dad is from the States. And I really, really, really enjoy working in digital media and audio on the continent. I think something that you might not know about me is that I played soccer in college. Wow. And I really enjoyed travel. I just went to Nigeria last week, and that was my 10th African country. And I feel very privileged to live and experience Africa as a continent in my late 20s and early 30s. Yeah. How's that?
That's off the chain, right? And that kind of leads me to then segueing into the question of what was your upbringing like? I mean, you're all the way in, you're living in Africa now, right? And this podcast really focuses on just talking about that transnational experience and how you go from one place to the other and how you leverage both. But before we get into that aspect of things, let's start from the beginning. What was growing up in New York like as a Ghanaian American, trying to figure things out in New York City of all places?
I mean, so I grew up in Westchester County.
Oh, okay, got you.
You know, we definitely spent a lot of time experiencing New York City, whether it was for events or for school trips. And then as a young adult, I lived on 23rd Street on the East Side. And most recently, before I moved to Kenya, I was living in Harlem on 130th between Lenox and Adam Clayton Powell. So I have definitely experienced the city. I love the city. And it's quite a different experience being on the continent, specifically in Kenya. There's a lot I like and there's a lot that I find challenging. I think from the likes, there's a convenience about living here that I never really experienced in New York. And I recognize that's because I have more privilege here than I would in New York, right? Yeah. So I can afford a housekeeper a couple times a week, or if I wanted to have a chef, I could go to the spa. I think the cost of living is lower here than it is in Harlem or Westchester, for instance. And that's definitely a benefit. The most significant challenge for me is community and the people I love and missing these major life experiences that happen in your late 20s and early 30s, right? Whether it's people getting engaged or married or having kids or going on little weekend trips. That's kind of unfeasible when a direct flight is 13 hours for me. So I'm more good than bad. I've definitely been incredibly privileged. I'm grateful to have the experiences I have and see what I've seen, but I miss my people a lot.
So how do you often retain and maintain connections? Like what are your usual devices or mediums that you use to just stay connected to your community all the way back in the States?
Well, connection, in my opinion, is paramount and fundamental to our existence and enjoyment of life, yeah, if I can say that. I think that you need people to co-regulate, for instance. Like a hug makes you feel better. There's science that tells you that your body calms down, you feel cared for, you feel supported. Yeah. And for me, it's not that I don't have people in Kenya, it's that I don't have my people, right, in Kenya.
Right.
And I think that's a big difference because, you know, the grocery store I go to, they say hi to me when they see me in the morning, or the greengrocer, or the coffee shop, or the people who work in the office that I'm in, or my colleagues. My Pilates class, people have familiarity with each other. I have familiarity with people. I do have relationships, but it's that next layer that I'm missing where I can just go to my best friend's house, or I can go to the place that I've been going to for the last couple of years, or my spot. I miss that a lot. And so the way that I keep in touch with people, I try to do these phone calls. It's difficult when you're 7 hours in the future, but I make time for it. And I have even started doing something where I put calendar invites on my friends' calendars once a month or twice a month, where it's recurring. And I have a touch base with my friends. I'm actively involved in community building in my life with those I care about. And I think, especially in this window of time, people are changing a lot. They're moving, life events are happening. So when you have something on a calendar and you're as busy as I'm sure you and I and some of your listeners are, it's nice to have something to look forward to. It's nice to be able to let your hair down with someone you haven't talked to that knows you, right, that you love, that you care about. So definitely phone calls. I make time to video chat. There was a running joke that I would only post on Instagram when I was upset because I would get so much engagement. I would get so much love. I would get the most hilarious comments and DMs from my friends hyping me up. There's nothing like your people having your back. And so you would see this really beautiful moment of me, and then you'd see all these comments, and I remember, you know, I was a cool girl in the coolest city in the world. Mm. You still got life changes you, your experiences changes you, but you do have people that care about you, even if in this moment you feel lonely. Mm. And the pandemic didn't help anyone, did it?
That's facts.
We were literally isolated by design through this quarantine experience, which was new to me and I'm sure new to most people.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that to me, I find that fascinating because I think about, I mean, even adding the founding factor of the pandemic and what that is, right? But like, thinking about leaving what, and give or take, you know, you can kind of clarify for me, but what would we consider your comfort zone? And then, you know, traveling to, you know, a 13 hour flight to Kenya and, you know, kind of living there. And, you know, although this is pluses and minuses, but then going through the pandemic and doing all of that while still trying to find ways to retain that connection. I mean, it's one of the things that kind of, you know, inspired this podcast, because there are people who do this, who've been doing this for years, right? Who take everything and they move to a different part of the world, but they're still trying to maintain connections. They still retain some form of identity and closeness to where their roots, quote, unquote. And so, like, I'm curious to know how and why digitized media, why focus on, you know, African content and African stories, and why live in the continent?
Well, everything is digital now. Businesses are looking into digital transformation in a significant way. And I think specifically when it comes to the continent, there's such a strong audio culture. Sound is so important. Stories have been told orally since the beginning of time. African history really hasn't been told by African people before. Additionally, radio has been quite powerful on this continent, as is the digitization of radio, and podcasts are picking up tremendously here. So it makes a lot of sense to step into something that allows you to memorialize culture, language, and identity, frankly, and help people do that. I think that Afropods as a platform has a really massive opportunity, and we're a hosting platform, right? So we statistics, and essentially what we're able to do then with data is build out that advertising funnel for audio on demand to show that African content is valuable and important and deserves to be compensated. And I think that we give information to the creators for them to advocate for themselves in front of advertisers, for us to advocate for advertising on their behalf. And it allows us collectively to build this ecosystem together. I feel very privileged to work in this space among who I consider pioneers in digital audio on the continent, and I'm excited to see what everyone does together, and I'm excited to be part of it. So that's why digital media and digital audio to me matters. When it comes to why did I decide to live on the continent, you know, my mom is from here, well, not Kenya, but from the continent. And also, and not for nothing, the United States is definitely having a moment right now. My lifestyle here, like I mentioned earlier, is a little bit more convenient and easy. Definitely the work is hard. Like what I'm doing is massive for work. That's hard. I even dream of work. But when it comes to living here and exploring somewhere new and being surrounded by people of color, primarily Black people on this continent, experiencing the vibrancy firsthand from diversity of thought, opinion, art, people, clothing, it's a privilege. I feel like I'm getting to live when I'm here, and I feel like none of that should be taken for granted. So being here has given me the opportunity of my lifetime thus far to see new things and enjoy new things. However, I also recognize that the experience I have is not the experience everyone has. Like, my mother even told me, the Africa you live in is not the Africa I lived in. And it's interesting to hear that, but I don't take it for granted at all.
Yeah. So growing up in Westchester County, growing up in New York, was this something you ever imagined yourself doing, saying, hey, you know what, when I get older, I'm going to move back to Africa? Or was it just something that, you know, just kind of happened?
A podcasting company?
Yeah,
I don't think I did. I'm not even sure if I knew what a podcast was. I'm certainly sure I didn't know what a podcast was at the time. You know, it's interesting when people ask, well, what did you want to do as a child? I actually don't really remember. I've always cared about people. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to be a kind person and surrounded myself with kind people who are curious about the world mm-hmm. around them. I think traditionally I've looked at a job as a way to fund my lifestyle and make money. I never really subscribed into like the work mentality mm-hmm. that people are so set on choosing to be part of their identity. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to contribute to the world around me in a meaningful way. And I feel very lucky that I really believe in the work that I'm doing. And I don't know how many people get the opportunity to spend a significant portion of their lives and days doing something that they think is important and pushing something forward that they feel can have value and impact. It's why I take this job so seriously. It's why I dream about it. I can't even get away. Mm. It's because I care. And I think that when I was younger, growing up in the suburbs, I mean, my parents, my mom and my dad, they enabled me to do anything I could. And I mean, maybe my anything scope was much smaller as a child. I never went without, but I feel like most children don't have any concept of going with or without. They mm-hmm. just, they either feel good or they don't. And I know I felt good. And I will definitely say, as an adult looking back at my life, I was extremely privileged. I got to travel significantly even when I was an infant, right? Mm. I think my first international trip, I was 6 months old. Mm. I started traveling internationally by myself when I was 8, like only from the US to the UK.
Those unaccompanied flights, I know about the with the little thing around your neck.
Yes, makes, yes, yeah. Unaccompanied
yeah, yeah,
I was that.
I did
so
that too.
I saw so much. Like I had experiences in that way. And I don't think I could have seen this in a million years. Mm. I think if you told me this, mm-hmm. I would have, if you were going to tell me that, you know, when you grow up, you're going to be an executive at an exciting media company and you're going to help people change their lives and help them make money and you're going to inspire people to look at something in a different way, I'd be like, wow, I can't wait to do that.
Yeah.
But the specifics of it, I couldn't imagine that.
Yeah. So then how do you balance, as a Ghanaian American, how did you balance or what was your cultural experience like in having that exposure to American, African-American culture, or just American culture and Ghanaian culture? Like, were you eating wache? Like, were you eating like kenke? And then some days, and you mix it up. And another day, you had some soul food. Like, what was that experience like coming up and having that multicultural, experience?
So it's interesting. My father is the American, and he's 1 in 4, and all of them somehow married different ethnicities. So
oh, wow.
I grew up with a lot of different types of cousins, okay? And on my dad's side.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I was culturally exposed from a young age. Like, my closest cousins in distance and in age are Persian American. So I remember going to their house and having, you know, tadik, which is the rice mm-hmm. where it's browned / burnt nicely, crisped.
Yeah.
On the bottom, and you flip it over in different types of stews and sauces. And my mother didn't really make a ton of West African food. She makes incredible stew.
Oh, yeah.
Spicy, more spicy Ooh. Than I think anyone can imagine. And we definitely had a lot of rice. But I think I grew up in a very Americanized household.
Mm.
And I don't think I had the true immigrant experience that a lot of people have.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't grow up in a 2-immigrant household, right?
Right.
So that's different.
Yeah.
And I think as I got older, I remember 1 year going to a game night for the first night of Kwanzaa, because umoja means togetherness,
yeah.
I think, something like that. And so my friend hosted a game night, and I had never done anything for Kwanzaa. It was not something that we celebrated.
Yeah.
And I found it so interesting And I was like, this is, I never did this before. I also, my mom wasn't making mac and cheese or fried chicken or collard greens or traditional Southern Black American food, mm-hmm. for instance. I didn't experience that culture growing up. And I had a lot of friends that did in Westchester. I grew up in White Plains, but I didn't. So I kind of navigated my youth in a really blissful way. And I say that because I think I was pretty ignorant to what the experiences were like for someone who had lived in a primarily a cultural household, like a household with two immigrant parents,
yeah.
or someone who had Black American parents.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends that had both, but it was different. I always knew I was Black. I always recognized I was a Black person.
Yeah.
But I kind of saw myself, even in my adulthood, as a Black woman who has a white father, you know, because no one has really confused me for a white woman yet. So, I mean, we're waiting for that day to change how I feel about my identity. But especially with, you know, the protests that were happening and this massive reckoning and recognition that Black people's lives matter and that they've been discriminated and racism is rampant, etc. I felt very privileged to recognize my place, mm-hmm. and also I think a little bit oblivious as a child as to the difference of Black American households and immigrant households, mm-hmm. and what the mix of both looks like.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we have some similar upbringings in terms of like international travel and just that notion of, you know, having very multicultural familial ties, right? Like I have so many cousins that are tied to so many things. And even when I think about my connections to Ghana, to Nigeria, to like, you know, Brazil, like it's so many ties that I've had growing up that I've learned so much. But then, you know, when I think about what you're describing, it also seems like you had, I would consider this a luxury to some extent, but it also seems like you got the luxury of not necessarily getting exposed to that conversation that commonly happens in Black spaces, which is the African and African American, you know, that I wouldn't call it dispute, but the historical tension that kind of exists in conversations that happen, where it's who is, you know, who did what to who, or, you know, why is there this, you did this to me. There's a lot of finger pointing and a lot of tension that kind of has spired between both groups that kind of lead to dissension intraracially. And, or if that, has that ever been your experience? Because for me, that was like, as soon as I immigrated here at a young age, around 8, and growing up in Chicago, you know, I initially didn't really understand the whole concept of, you know, just racism and all the other things that I've learned now. But a very important part was just coming up, being told from many community members in the African immigrant spaces where it was, stay away from them. You're not them. Yeah, we are African. They are not. Right. And so I had to kind of navigate through that. And I wonder if that is something that you've ever caught wind of, or you were completely sheltered from, you know.
I mean, wasn't oblivious to the world.
Well, no, I mean, not that, but you didn't have to necessarily, was it something that you didn't have to encounter like on a day-to-day basis, right?
Not on a day-to-day basis, right. No. But I mean, since I can remember, my mom always has braids or twists in. And it's always going to the African braiding shop, or it's having the woman come to the house. I actually stopped wearing braids in middle school, like cornrows. And then when I came to Kenya was when I got box braids for like the first time in 12 years. It's crazy. It looks, yeah. And for those who are listening, instead of watching now, I have braids in my head right now that go down past my waist for those who care. Braids all day.
Yeah.
So I grew up and had, I want to say that's just like a Black experience, for instance, for women having braids. Yeah. But I definitely was in the African braiding shops at a young age. That's what we were doing. Yeah. I think that I cannot remember having the conversation of being different than Black Americans, yeah. or African people. I know that my friends who grew up in the same county as me did, because we recently talked about it a couple of years ago, and I was shocked that they had experienced something so different. Yeah. And they were shocked that I experienced something so different. Yeah. I also grew up playing sports and doing a lot of activities. So I think I was exposed to a different type of world. Also, I was a young girl. I think that young boys get a little bit of a different conversation, but I could be wrong.
Now, let's kind of fast forward a little bit, all right? And so you've grown up, you've moved to Nairobi, and you're CEO as a black woman in Africa running a company. What is that like?
It is such an incredible feeling. I feel like I've made my parents proud. So, you know, I'm a firstborn. I'm the first African grandchild. I definitely feel like I had a little bit of resistance moving to the continent. The people that didn't give me resistance were my parents.
Wow.
Everyone else questioned it. But my mom was like, okay. She didn't even ask me why. She just said, okay.
Wow.
And my dad was like, I'm so excited for you. And I felt so supported in that. I remember when we got to the airport, my mom was a little bit frazzled. You know, my bag was like 2 pounds over the limit. She was like, let me just put her in business class. It's cheaper when you upgrade at the gate. And, you know, I don't fly business class regularly. That's not my, I'm not that type of person. Mm-hmm. But I was like, mom, it's 2 pounds. I'll put on the extra sweaters. You know how it goes. Mm-hmm. Oh, let me get my suitcase. Let me get my stuff out. Mm-hmm. And I think in that moment, I realized that she was a little nervous for me. Like, she left at 18. She went to school. She had me at 21 in the States. And I'm very, very proud of her. And my dad, I mean, he's incredible. He's so smart. Like, I have parents who really love me and who are really proud of me and have given me so much space to stretch my wings that I'm not sure is that common in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I don't have the incredibly close family dynamic where you have dinner every weekend or you live in the same three blocks.
Yeah.
Our cousins were always really widespread, and that was normal to me. So when I decided to come here, it was supported. And I think what makes me comfortable is even being on this call with you right now. For instance, it's 5 o'clock in Kenya, 5 p.m. Yeah. There's an 11:35 flight that leaves tonight to New York every day. Huh. I can get on that flight at any time. I'm not afraid of leaving. I'm not afraid of a flight. There's nothing that can stop me. I can always say no if I don't want to do something, and I can always leave. And I think that's something that women don't always learn as children. Like, you can say no. If you don't want to be here, you can leave. You're not stuck. You can get away. I will show up for you. I will get you out of this situation. And that's followed me to adulthood, where just because I have anything doesn't mean that you own me. That means I can go. And I think knowing that I made decisions intentionally has allowed me to even step into such a massive role like this and feel confident and capable and excited and empowered to know that I made that decision myself. So I feel a lot of responsibility, but I also recognize the privilege that comes with a position like this, with this title. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. It's an honor. And I don't take any of those things lightly, which is why I weigh that privilege with responsibility, to know that the decisions I make are not just because I want to make them. They're on behalf of the African on the ground that I've spoken to, not just in my head. They're real decisions that can impact people in the creative economy in a way that empowers them to make money off of following their dreams. Yeah. That's important. So I wake up and I feel blown away that this is where I am, this is what I get to do, this is where I came from. I'm 2 degrees from the village. If for those who are Ghanaian who listen to your podcast, my mom's Ewe, she grew up in Accra. My grandparents grew up in the Volta, grandmother from Pekki, grandfather from Bako. I went there. It is a jumpy road for like 3 to 4 hours. And when we did the traditional welcomes at our grandparents' villages, it put in perspective how insane it is that my grandparents lived in these villages. Hmm. My mother grew up in the capital. I grew up in Westchester County, and I'm like, I need therapy. And I'm a huge proponent of therapy. I had therapy last night. But imagine.
Yeah.
And now I'm the CEO of a business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
What a story.
How can you even, like, I don't even know if being a CEO of a business is as impressive as leaving the village as it is from going from the continent to the US and making it into one of these affluent suburbs of a massive city.
Yeah.
Like, this is, what can I even do?
And then having a kid that goes to become a CEO, that's crazy. That's a story. That's a story to be proud of, right? Like, that is incredible. And this is, this is what it's about, right? And so, I'm glad you kind of talked about going back to Ghana, because I was going to ask about that later on. But that being able to connect all of that and kind of create that timeline and look back at it, is, it's one of those things that you just, that sometimes it takes your breath away, because you're just like, wow, like, my people did that. Like, my moms did that. And you salute the courage, the bravery to really just be able to get on a flight. And you talk about life changing things, having a baby, making that travel, trying to figure out, like, what's the next move? I'm in this country with people who don't look like me as much, and I got to find my community. I got to figure it out. And to be able to do that, I mean, this is noteworthy and remarkable. Now, I want to talk quickly about that fear, because you speak on something that I think is very interesting when you said that the least resistance was from your parents, where most people would think that is your parents that would have the fear. I know for a fact, you know, when I have conversation with people about the idea of just going back to Africa, it's like, what, bro? Like, you know, like, are you serious? Like, why would you do that? Right? Like, we got electricity here. Like, we got water here. We got, you know, we got the social media is popping here. Like, we ain't got to worry. We got 5G, 10G. Like, what is happening? Right? And so I know that.
Huh? I got electricity.
Yeah, I know. I mean, so tell us, right? Tell us what it's like. Tell the people, because there are lots of people who listen to this podcast who are, I would say, gradually learning that Africa is not much to be scared of. I think that, and I think you mentioned it about what your mom said, the Africa I grew up in, not the Africa you're growing up in. So can you talk a little bit about that and share that? Because you mentioned it a little bit about some of the perks and like the cost of living, but I think we can unpack that a little bit more.
Well, I think you're right that a lot of people would potentially experience resistance from their family members. I will say I did get some looks. They just didn't verbalize them. And I am lucky to be unequivocally supported in the ways that I make significant decisions in, right? So maybe I won't make the best decision for lunch, but moving across the world, I think my family knows that I can be trusted with decisions, and also knows that what I know about my family is we have each other's back. Yeah. Everyone's family got issues. Let's just put that on the table. Ain't nobody's family perfect. Not yours, not yours, not yours. Mm-hmm. And I know that they have my back. I know that if anything happens, I can ask, but I also feel very independent and capable. When it comes to living on the continent, what I told my friends when I first moved was I live like a wealthy woman in Westchester.
Wow.
And that was how I explained it. I was like, that
wow.
is, you know, that's what we knew, right? And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, no. Like, my housekeeper comes twice a week. I'm one person. I got a 2-bedroom. It's under $800. I have an incredible balcony and view. I can go to the farmer's market. I can go to the grocery store and I don't have to look at the prices. There's tiers of wealth. The first, I forget what the tiers are, but I know one of them is like, can you grocery shop and not look at the price? And I'm there.
Ooh.
Like,
ooh.
I also, wow, like, vegetables are so cheap. Mm. They're so affordable. And so, or inexpensive, I think is a better word to say, but you can get a week worth of vegetables for less than $20 and eat significant vegetarian plant-based meals every single meal for a week. So, I mean, the luxury I've experienced in this country and even on this continent, but I'll speak specifically on Kenya, unparalleled. Mm. The Kenyan coast is incredible. The Indian Ocean is beautiful. The bush going on safari is magnificent. I mean, honestly, I'm spoiled for choice. That's the expression. And I'm so grateful I get to experience this now. I've been on so many safaris. Can you imagine? I can say that I've been on so many safaris. That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
And I think that it never gets old. I'll tell you, it doesn't get old seeing a zebra or seeing a lion or seeing a giraffe. It's incredible. And I think somewhere like this, which has an incredibly vibrant cosmopolitan and city scene in Nairobi, but there's so much to do outside: mountain, bush, lake, hiking, desert in the north, beach. It really is an outdoor person's paradise. Mm. And I feel like that's just good for your nervous system, frankly. So my lifestyle here, I don't really indulge in all of those amenities that make my life more convenient, which maybe I should get into. I have a housekeeper twice a week, but I do a lot of self-care activities. And I think that because there's such a interesting impact of Indian people in Kenya, there's a lot of holistic healthcare. So I've done cupping, I do Pilates 3 times a week, I get reflexology, I've done massages, and I get to take care of myself in a very luxurious way, which to me is the epitome of luxury. I take care of my body more than I would be the type of person to buy luxury bags or designer clothes. That's just not my version of luxury, or maybe it's not the version of luxury that I'm not at that level of luxury.
Right.
I'm at optimize my life and optimize my body. And I invest a lot of money into do that. I get therapy every week. I've had a life coach. I've talked to a psychiatrist before. There's nothing wrong with, you know, taking care of your body, mind, and spirit collectively together. So my luxury is in my care.
Yeah. I mean, yo, that's dope. And I think for those listening, this is what we've talked about in many, many instances, or, you know, discussed, where that fear of going back to Africa, it's not that bad. People show you how to live life if you really, really want to understand wealth and like...
I don't think they're living life elsewhere. Now that I've lived here, let me tell you, life is not just going to the office every day. It is... Being off is being off.
Yeah,
the reality of it, if we want to shake the table a little bit, is that this modern 9-to-5 work structure is basically... I think it was like the Ford Model T, like that time frame, whatever was in there. We haven't even worked 9-to-5 for 100 years. Why do we think it's the only way? Like, people are getting more sick. Stress makes people sick. It puts more of an impact on the pharmaceutical and healthcare industry. Mm. I mean, I have an autoimmune issue as it is, and my dream is not work, which is why when I said earlier, I want to contribute to the world around me in a meaningful way. I don't want my brain to turn into mush. I want to be able to critically think and solve problems. Mm. But the concept of work that exists specifically in America, even more specifically in New York, that should not be anyone's dream. You are not living.
Yeah.
You are not. There's more to see on this incredible planet that we get to live on. And it really is incredible. Like, I was in Costa Rica with a girlfriend of mine last December. We had points, so we went for free. And it was a last minute trip, and it was so incredible. But we went on this tour on some water somewhere, and we were in the Nicola Peninsula. It was a bioluminescent bay. It was no moon.
Wow.
And I remember on this boat, it's a protected park. There's no buildings anywhere in Costa Rica, in a bioluminescent bay with no moon. And I remember being on this boat thinking, this planet is incredible. There's so much to see. Like, there's so much to see. And I know we get lost in the day-to-day, but living, whether it's loving up on your people or seeing something new or eating something incredible, that's living.
Yeah.
Contributing to the world around you, yeah, that's living. But don't get twisted in that 9-to-5 being the only way to live. Because I will have you know, you are absolutely mistaken on that.
Yeah. There's so much, man. I'm not even going to add to that, because that's it right there. That's the tweet. And I think real quick before we start to wrap up, I want to talk a little bit more about AfroPods, and I just want to talk about what you all have going on and just what you all have planned for the future and the growth of it. I can only imagine that you being able to run this company, this podcasting company where we talk, I mean, we're just talking about stories and we've just kind of, you know, been building around the idea of what, how natural storytelling is to Africa and Africans. And I wonder just how much experience you've gotten just interacting with all things Africa by working and running and leading this company. And so what is, how does that influence the continual development and growth? Because you've gotten so much exposure now. You're traveling to these different countries. You see their different awards, different innovative new things that are happening for Africa by Africans in terms of media, digitized media, and all things related. And so, like, how is that impacting you running the company and its potential direction?
Sure. That's a great question.
Thank you.
I mean, I have barely scratched the surface on this continent. 1.3 billion people, that's a lot. Yeah, and each country is different.
Yeah.
Each country is different, has its own nuances, culture, languages, dialects, food. I have seen a lot. I've not seen that much, but I've seen a lot. And I think what is constantly reinforced to me is that you don't know enough. If I'm being totally honest, that's after all that I have seen in my life, what I know is I don't know enough. What I know is I don't know at all. And I think that's what keeps me going, because as soon as I recognize I don't know at all, that means I'm gonna learn. And there's no way to learn at all about any continent, in my opinion. But I'm going to continue to explore the things that fascinate me. I'm going to find someone who knows more about something that I don't know so that we can uncover it together. A great example is Francophone Africa. Yeah. I think it's the most vibrant opportunity on the continent. I read this incredible article that talks about how the coast of West Africa from Abidjan, Lomé, Cotonou, Accra, Lagos, that whole area. And I know that Accra and Lagos aren't Francophone, but looking at that region and the impact is going to be so significant over the next 50 years. And then you look at this, I think it's 13 countries that identify as Francophone. I could be wrong on that. But you look at these countries and I don't know much about any of them. And I know that they're creating so much exciting content and there's so much value there and there's so much culture. So what I know is that I don't know enough and I need to find someone who knows more than us. And I know that we need to recognize these people. I know that they need to take up space. I know that their voices are just as valuable. So when I was invited to be a guest editor-in-chief of a magazine called Tap, I did a takeover and we got 80 contributors across 18 countries and made sure we even had a small French section, which I fought for with the editor, because even if we don't understand, that does not mean
shouldn't put them
that
out
it's
there.
Not valuable.
Exactly.
It means it's not for you.
Exactly.
That's all that means.
Exactly.
There's so much in English. The stuff that's in Swahili or Creole or Zulu or Arabic is valuable. It does not have to be in English for you. And I think that's something that I've really stood 10 toes down on, that I don't know everything. And there's no way I'm going to know everything, but there are people that know more than me, and I want those people around me, and I want those people to be curious, and I want to highlight as much as we can of this incredibly vibrant continent, especially when it comes to audio, especially when it comes to digital, and especially when it comes to opportunity in the tech space. And I look at my position as one of many to open doors for more people. Right? It's none of this job is about me. And I'm very, very grateful for that position and ability. And I hope that I'm doing right by at least one person, because one person is enough. You change one person's life, you've done something incredible. Imagine being in a position to change thousands of people's lives by giving them an opportunity to make money off of their content in whatever platform you're in. Imagine being a platform that has content that inspires a new generation of whatever they do because they chose to listen to your platform that had content from a different creator. I mean, imagine someone reads the magazine that I helped edit. That's such impact. And so I think for AfroPods in the future, what we'll see is more podcasters, more listeners, more advertisers, more visibility for the podcasters, more expansion in different countries, more reach, more languages. And I would like to say it really lays in more is more, right? Yeah. We're going to see growth, but more is more.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, you definitely talk as far as impacting, add me to one of those people. Because for sure, learning about AfroPods and being exposed to it was definitely one I was like, wow, like I wish, and I definitely need to be involved in some way, shape, or form. So even being able to do that is definitely one you can add me to that. All right, some quick hitters, really quickly, just for people to learn a little bit more about Molly Jensen. All right, so favorite food?
Ooh, Indian. Oh no, Italian.
Italian. Sorry, me too. Italian. Yay. I love Italian food. Favorite Italian food. What are we talking about?
I love pasta. I love cacio pepe, and most places do it wrong.
I love pasta.
I love pasta.
Oh, I love me some pasta, girl.
It's so good.
I love pasta. Ooh. I can definitely go for some lasagna too. That's definitely my thing. Love lasagna.
That counts.
But man, yeah, that's my thing. People be like, African food? I mean, listen, that's by nature. But like Italian food, I just had this conversation with my daughter. She was trying to figure out she thought I love like Chinese food. I was like, girl, no. Throw me some pasta.
Italian food is going to hit it every time.
Every time. God, with the sauce. Yeah, okay. All right, cool. Favorite music or favorite type of genre?
It changes. Right now, I've been listening to a lot of Black classical music, but my favorite for real is probably, if I'm being honest, outside of Beyonce, it's soca music.
Okay.
Soca music.
Okay. All right. And then, so favorite hobby when you're not working or you're not, you know, doing anything related to the gig?
Right now, it's Pilates, but my all-time favorite was soccer. I was a goalkeeper.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. And then as far as favorite book.
Interesting. Huh. Growing up, I always think of the Harry Potter series. That was like the first book I really got into.
Me too.
But, you know, I've been reading a book. The woman who is the COO of Stripe, she just wrote a book. It just came out. It's kind of like a how-to with business. It's called Scaling People. It's really good. I haven't even gotten through it. It's like a workbook, but it's massive. So I would say right now Scaling People, but all time definitely Harry Potter. And unfortunately JK Rowling is really vocal about things that I wish she wasn't as vocal about, and also on the wrong side of history about. But that was the first anthology, if I could say, of books that I read
from beginning to end. I remember being forced to read Harry Potter and then realizing that, okay, this isn't like, my mom got me a book and she was like, you need to read this book, and I was like, okay, because she's like, you play the video game too much. Okay, fine. So then I got the book, read it, and I was like, I'm not going, I need all of it. All right, and so I'd be remiss, because I know people will be like, why didn't you ask this? So favorite African dish?
We're gonna do this. You're Nigerian, huh?
No, really, yeah, we need this. To do this. We can do this.
It's
gonna
be jollof rice. But I will say, so jollof rice, I can eat the rice by itself.
Yeah.
I really cook. My mom's stew is the best thing I've ever had in my whole life. It's probably incredible. But if we're talking about best African cuisine, Senegalese food is ridiculous. Ridiculous. It is a fan favorite. Everyone likes it. It's incredible. Everything is amazing. I highly suggest Senegalese food if people haven't had it. It's so good.
I haven't had enough to make any judgment or comments about it. But people, you are one of the, I think you were probably like the fifth person who has been like, Senegalese goes crazy. And I was like, are you serious? It's like, yeah. I'm like, over Ghanaian food, over Nigerian food, you know, me and my biases.
As a cuisine.
Yeah, yeah, I know. As a cuisine, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. That's absolutely deep. You get them around some fish, they know what they're doing. They put some chicken, the yassa with the onions, they know what they're doing. The rice is spectacular. The pepper is hot, but they also do savory dishes. Oof. You just... Anyone can eat Senegalese food, and if you don't like Senegalese food, I'm very curious because I've never heard that before.
I gotta try more of it because I've had the rice and that's been cool, but I haven't had anything.
The lamb is incredible. DB is incredible. The brochette, like the skewered meat, everything. Senegalese food, you can't go wrong. You can't.
Yeah. Oh my god, yo, this has been fun. All right, my last question as we wrap up is, and you touched on it again, so if it's being redundant, then you know, edit it out, whatever. But what do you want your legacy to be? I always ask that.
I want people to, I hope that the legacy I leave people that know me and potentially people that don't know me is that people believed that I cared. That is the most important thing to me. The creators matter, which is why I keep them as my North Star, which is why I'm able to speak about this so passionately. My community matters to me, which is why I schedule these Google Meet calendar invites to chat with them monthly. I want people to look back at my life and know that I cared about them and know that I truly, truly wanted what was best for them and that I was kind.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, man, it's been a pleasure having you on. I know you got a somewhat busy schedule, but you have a well-balanced life. And I just want to thank you so much on behalf of My Black is Transnational for jumping on the show. Molly Jansen, again, CEO of AfroPods. And please be sure to check out AfroPods. We have just a variety of different podcasts based on African stories and different African podcasts. And best believe you'll find My Black is Transnational on there as well. How can people follow you? People want to keep up with you. Are you on social media? How do you, interact with people who want to learn more about you?
Sure. Well, the best way to reach anything with podcast related or work is probably at AfroPods at AFRIPODS.com. My social media, I'm not so active. The best place to find me is LinkedIn. So Molly Jensen, JENSEN. And for Twitter, it's MJ Acosta, but I'm not so active, so don't look for me on social if you do go through the business. Otherwise, if you really want to connect with me, LinkedIn is probably the best way to do it.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much again for jumping on the show. Really appreciate it. And we just are looking forward to all the great things you're going to be doing with AfroPod. We wish you nothing but the best success. And of course, with My Black is Transnational, we are now avid fans of you all.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for being one of our true fans. It's truly my honor to sit here with your listeners.
All right, Molly Jansen, thank you so much. So that's going to do it for this episode of My Black is Transnational. If you like what you heard, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and review the podcast. You can learn more about this podcast by visiting our website at blacktransnational.com. You can follow me, the host, at blacktransnational_ on Instagram, or you can follow the podcast at Black Transnational Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. So, until next time, my name is Dr. Kalechi Bay Lambert. My Black is Transnational, and I hope by the end of this, yours will be too. Peace.